It's been torrential rain here and pretty cold as well. But however, we're going to warm up our listeners today. This is John Campbell on Miracle Hour with BBS Radio. And we've got a very, very interesting guest this afternoon. And I'll tell you a little bit about how I came across this amazing woman. I was pretty early on my waking up path, and I was reading all sorts of different material. And you know how it is when you start to listen in and tune into yourself, books kind of jump out shelves and hit you. And a book came out and really kind of just fell out into my lap called Divine Intervention. And I had already by this time sort of, you know, fully accepted that there was another dimension of time and space than the one that we generally see. But this book hit me because I was absolutely struck by the courage of the author. This woman had been a nutritional journalist and had interviewed Princess Diana some time about nutrition and kind of connected with her. And then suddenly one day after Diana's death, she got a gone through quite an experience, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Hazel Courtney as our guest this evening, this afternoon. Hazel, can you hear me okay?
I can, John. We're in a wet and windy London. So.
Oh, you're in wet and windy London. Well,
yeah, we can get our galoshes out, yes.
You got your galoshes. Well, Hazel, you know, it was amazing how we met, really. I mean, just want to tell the listeners there, Hazel and I were both, didn't know each other then. We were going to listen to our last week's guest, Gary Renard, talk in London, and we were stuck in the lift, and suddenly somebody was talking about my book, and then Hazel said, you've written a book, so have I, and what is it? And she told me it was Divine Intervention. I could not believe it. I'd never met her. I'd never had the pleasure of meeting her, and there we were. So welcome to the show, Hazel, from wet and windy London. You're welcome. What I'd like to do is, what I do with a lot of my guests, is give a little bit of a background where they came from, but with you, because this is such an amazing story, and I'm going to ask you bits of questions, so if we can get some time in there, because when this incredible incident happened to you, I don't think you were in the same space as a lot of people. You didn't even sort of, you weren't dabbling in this kind of stuff. Is that correct?
What had happened was, the story went that in my, because I'm now 59, so during my late 30s, my next door neighbor, her husband collapsed and died. And so I went round, I didn't really know her, we lived in sort of detached homes, and I thought, you know, I really do need to be neighborly, I should go over and just say how sad I am about her husband. And at the time I was a very vacuous individual who thought that the only thing that mattered in life was dressing in designer clothes and having some money in the bank. There's still quite a lot of people like that around today. And so I went over to say how sad I was that her husband had died. And she wasn't actually crying. And she said to me, well, why would I cry? She said, if I want to speak to my husband, I can do it at any time. And I thought, wow, this woman needs a psychiatrist and some Valium. But as I sat with her, she said to me, you know, there are other dimensions that we know nothing about. And I really thought she'd lost the plot. But she gave me a book of channelings by, I think it was the White Brotherhood or some such thing. Silver Birch, that's it. Is it Silver Birch? Anyway. And I sat up all night reading it. And it's as if this enormous door had opened into my life. And I started meditating with her now and again, and she became like my teacher. And so then one night when I was about, I don't know, maybe 43 or so, I heard this voice very clearly in my head in the middle of the night saying, write. And I thought, crikey, I woke up the next morning and I said to my husband, I'm going to become a journalist. And he looked at me as if I was mad and said, of course you are, my dear. But within 6 months, I had my own column in a national newspaper on health, alternative medicine. And so I don't know if you, I mean, I don't know if you realize how hard it is to get a column in a national newspaper, but in other words, everything, all the doors just opened in the right places. Sorry, you still there?
Yes, I am. Yeah, I'm fascinated. So, I think that's what happens, isn't it? When you are on the right path, what you're supposed to be doing, the doors open and everything just closed, doesn't it?
But then the thing is, you know, then I went to work for the Sunday Times and I had my own health column every week, but I was getting slightly more spiritual. And then what happened was, after Princess Diana was killed, obviously I was a huge fan of hers, as millions of people were. I started getting messages from various mediums who said, you'll never believe who wants to work with you, but I can't tell you over the phone. You know, they were terribly secretive, and I thought, gosh, these people really need to lighten up, because I was very busy. And so I would meet with one or two of them, and they would say, Princess Diana wants to work with you from the other side. And I thought, crikey, this is bonkers. So I just completely ignored it. And then I went to see Mother Meera in Germany. I don't know if you've heard of her. She's an enlightened being, who at the time was in Germany. I think she still is. And everybody said to me, when you go up to stare into her eyes, it's called Darshan, you should ask for what you want. And so I asked for an acceleration of my spiritual journey. And a month later, my secretary had a dream that Diana was sitting with her in a theater, and that I was on the stage, and Diana said to her in this dream, the curtain's about to go up. And a week later, I had what's known as a Kundalini awakening in Harrods Bread Hall, and it was as if an explosion had gone off inside my body. And within 3 or 4 seconds, I could hear this really loud voice shouting in my head that I knew hadn't come from me. And I didn't know what to do except obviously go to the doctor, because his voice was saying, go to the doctor now. And by the time I got to the doctor, they thought I'd had a massive heart attack. But by the time I was on the floor with all the equipment on my chest, I could already feel the doctor's thoughts in my head. I knew what he was thinking. And that really put the wind up him. And I knew that everything had become perfect. And the story went on from there. And then it all happened over Easter, which, of course, Easter of 1998, which, of course, is the traditional time of death and rebirth. And on the Easter Saturday, with a doctor present, I left this world and I went to another. And then I came back again.
Yeah. Well, I remember very clearly, I mean, it is some years since I read the book, but I remember you recorded, or you got somebody to take photographs of you, and I was really shocked at the physical appearance that you took on during that time, and I think it was tremendous that you got the photographs taken, because it had to be seen to be believed. You know, I mean, there was one picture I remember you looked gaunt and completely drawn, and you really looked a wreck.
I was a wreck, but the thing is, when you have a Kundalini awakening, as people like Stan Grof, Professor Stan Grof, he's like a world expert on what they call spiritual emergency, that's when a spiritual awakening becomes a physical crisis, and my God, mine sure became a physical crisis. It was as if I wasn't being allowed to eat, whereas I love food. I lost a lot of weight very rapidly. I had tremendous electrical surges going through my body. I was crashing electronic equipment. I had a tremendous fever. So one minute my temperature would go up to about 104, and the next minute I felt as if I was freezing to death. And the doctor that came to stay with us, he just had never seen anything like it in his life. And there was this voice coming out of my mouth that wasn't mine.
And was that, when you said a voice coming out of your mouth that wasn't you, was that the sort of beginning of the trance channeling, or?
Was that the beginning of the what? Sorry?
Did you start to experience a trance channeling experience?
Well, no, I'd actually had like a walk-in, in the sense that I didn't know it at the time, but Diana was, it felt like there were two of us in here. It was like I became two people at once. I now understand a little bit how people can have multiple personality disorders, because You know, I was saying things that I don't say. I was wanting things that I don't normally want. And I had access to information. It was as if I'd been plugged into an absolutely supercomputer. So any information that I needed, in the moment that I needed to know it, I knew it. I mean, it cooks all the circuits in your brain. I was levitating. I was totally telepathic, totally psychic. I could see our potential futures. I understood that time didn't exist. I understood many things that previously would have seemed incredulous to me.
So, I mean, the thing that strikes me is that this is an amazingly powerful experience that you were, in many ways, I guess, you were ill-prepared for.
I was totally ill-prepared, and that's the point, that if you meditate regularly, and if you take your spiritual journey slowly, and you treat your body with more respect than I was treating mine at the time, and you mix with people who can explain what is happening to you when these things happen, then you can have a full, and if you know, I mean, obviously people bandy the word enlightenment around a lot, and half of them don't really know what they're talking about. And what I'm saying is there are thousands of varying degrees of enlightenment, but when you have that breakthrough, how you're prepared for it in mind and body will, that ultimately will help you to get through the experience. It depends how it ends up. There are an awful lot of people, John, in mental homes and in psychiatric institutions who have had these kind of breakthroughs. I called it walking between worlds. And if they had the right kind of help and they got a balance in their lives instead of being fed lots of terrible drugs that make them worse, then so many more people could make a difference to this world.
Absolutely. Well, I know exactly what you mean there, Hazel, because when I was a couple of years into my sort of awakening, I used to go to AA, and there was a guy in there, and I could tell that he was psychic, you know, you get that sense. And he was being ridiculed because he was sharing that he was having, a voice in his head. And I kept pleading with him. I said, look, I do not know how to help you if I don't have those skills, but I do know people that do. And I kept trying to encourage him to go to somebody that could help him manage the energy, which I recognized was coming through. He actually shared, he brought a message to me from a very dear friend who'd been killed in a car crash out in Nigeria, and he knew nothing about this, so I knew he was psychic. And tragically, he became one of those statistics that you're talking about. He went to the medical profession, he got diagnosed, and the next thing he was on a whole bunch of drugs and in and out of a mental hospital.
But again, John, I started to think, responding to what you just said, I started to think on multiple levels. So whilst I realize that sometimes if people don't have enough nutrients in their body, then their brain chemistry becomes imbalanced, I also knew that sometimes, say for instance, if people have taken a lot of crack cocaine or a lot of cannabis, a lot of them are then having kundalini experiences. The veils between this dimension and others are lifting suddenly, like they did with me. And these people are like completely freaking out. And so sometimes it can be drug-related. Sometimes if somebody's under intense stress, then that also can alter brain chemistry. So there are always many, many, many reasons as to why people have these experiences. Some women I've met who've had them when they've been giving birth, orgasm sometimes, we should be so lucky. There's lots of reasons to have these types of experiences, but it's always best if you can do it in a balanced way.
Yeah, it's that word balance is so important. So when you had this massive sort of kundalini experience, and then I remember you were actually in bed for a period of time. Tell our listeners, if you could, Hazel, what happened then? When did Diana start coming through in a more controlled way with messages for you?
Right, well, after about 3 or 4 days, I kept saying to people, look into my eyes and you'll know who I am. And it was only on the, I can't remember which day it was now, but at one point I was lying in bed, and I thought I was freezing to death. Literally, I was so cold. And I remember being turned over on my back with my hands across my body, and I knew I was in a grave. And then I was watching, or I was inside a car at the time of an accident, and it was only when I actually, the car hit, that I realized who was with me, if you like. I knew then that it was Diana, and I literally thought I was losing my mind. But as the weeks went by and things started to even out a bit, I mean, I virtually died of shock with everything that was happening to me. But once it became a lot more balanced and I could hear the voice very clearly, I just got the distinct impression that she had agreed to become like a spokesperson on the other side to tell us that we all go on. It's the same as, for instance, if she was doing a charity here, people would pay thousands of pounds to go and have lunch with her because she was Princess Diana. So lots of people have said they've heard from John Lennon and various other famous people on the other side, especially John F. Kennedy and all those types of people. So if your, say, Auntie Mary came through, nobody would be interested, but if somebody really famous comes through, then, you know, the books tend to sell a fraction better. And so I think that she wanted people to know that we all go on, that we're all immortal and eternal. And that was the main, that's the main part of her message.
Yeah, I mean, I was impressed with the integrity I felt. And it's interesting, you know, Hazel, because when I picked that book up, there wasn't one second that I questioned the authenticity of the story that you were writing. Not for
one
second.
Oh, you're very sweet. It destroyed my reputation as a journalist.
Yeah, and I have to give my intuition quite a bit of stroke in there as well, because I had the same thing, you know, poor old Gary Renard there, who was my guest 2 weeks ago on the show. You know, so many people have questioned his experience, you know, where he, you know, actually saw in the physical form, which we know can happen. Any, you know, I just knew it. And when I read that part as well, that he opened his eyes to see those two bodies there, it never for one second did I question it. It's like I knew this was genuine. And then
absolutely.
I think the thing reading your book, which also impressed me, was I'm right in thinking that Diana refused to discuss any of the aspects of the motor crash. That was another thing, wasn't it?
Well, not. I mean, to be honest, you see, all this is now nearly 10 years ago. So remember, what she said to me back then, I don't think would be what she'd say to me now. But she just said that it was an accident, and she wanted it left as an accident. Because it's like people can keep discussing who killed JFK or who killed Diana or was it an accident. The point is they're gone. You know, they're gone from that particular lifetime. And so I'm sure JFK must be back now as somebody else, and I'm sure Diana will be back sometime soon. Do you know what I mean? So in other words, there's no point going over old ground, because it's not going to take anyone forward.
No, that's right. That's right. And of course, it only emphasizes it's the ego at work, isn't it? Keeping you away from what's really important, which is the spiritual aspect, and keeping you occupied in the story, if you like.
It's absolutely true. But I mean, I think that after I went through my experience, I then went and found very, very highly accredited scientists around the world, like Stan Grof and like Gary Schwartz and Bill Tiller, who were able to explain to me what happened to me and what is also happening to thousands of other people. And when I saw scans from a biophysicist called Harry Oldfield here in the UK, and he actually showed me a picture of my kundalini in my back, I couldn't believe it. When you're going through these experiences, as you perhaps know, and many other people know, you think you're the only person going through it. And when he showed me a scan of my kundalini, he said, "Oh, look, there it goes." And I said, "You mean you've seen this before?" He said, "Oh, yes, I see several a week that are active." I think it's really important for people to realize that this is something that's happening to hundreds of thousands of people around the world, and that we're all capable of far more than we can even begin to realize. And so I then went on to write Divine Intervention, and I wrote a sequel to that called The Evidence for the Sixth Sense, which gave a lot of the evidence for all that I went through, and how mm-hmm. enlightened men and women are able to do what they do, how miracles are possible. And now, yeah. with meeting Gary Renard, it's almost like I've come full circle. So now I'm starting the end of the trilogy based on Gary's work.
Oh, that's fantastic. Hazel, that's wonderful because, you know, he's quite a person, isn't he? And did you get across to interview him in the end over in
yeah,
Norway?
Yeah, I went to Stockholm and I was with him for 2 days, about 3 weeks ago. And it was very dramatic, actually, because Condoleezza Rice, the American Secretary of State, was staying at my hotel. So, like, the whole place was full of all these men in black. And it was so funny that it should all happen when I'm seeing Gary Renard, that all this conference should be taking place. But it's like I've known for about a year that this new book that I'm about to start should be something to do with, like, the journey home. And my publisher said that sounds so boring, it's not true. But what Gary is saying is true. We need to get ready to go home. Because once I was talking to Bill Tiller, who's one of the world's finest physicists, and he explained to me that enlightenment is total coherence of the brain. So what people call God is total coherence. And I said to him, can you draw God for me? And he drew a straight line. And I said, well, what's that, Bill? And he said, well, that's total coherence. That's what God is. It's everything and nothing. It's just total stillness. It's just isness. And he showed me where we came from, and we kind of decoherent. It's really hard to explain over the phone, but we kind of were just an odd little thought in this total coherence of what if. So what people call the Big Bang, how can I explain this over the phone? What people call the Big Bang was just like a thought, like this enormous explosion of energy. And so he said that we have decohered as far as we can get. And he said, now we're going back towards coherence. And I said to him, what will happen when everything becomes coherent? He said, the universe will disappear.
There you go.
So when I saw Gary's book, I kind of just freaked out. It was like you say, when the pupil is ready, the master appears. So here I am as a pupil all over again, and Gary appeared. So I think his books, and especially his book, Your Immortal Reality, I think are exceptional books.
Absolutely, and I totally agree with you, and it's interesting because I can't remember when we met whether you said you were a student of the Course, a serious student of the Course, but that part that you're talking about, what the Big Bang talks about, I think the Course refers to that moment when we had this tiny mad idea that we separated from God.
Well, I think it was the birth of something it was the birth out of something much greater. In other words, we are definitely not all that is. I mean, that is almost laughable, but when you start to talk about the enormity of all these consciousness and multiple dimensions, as Bill Tiller said to me, he said, your human mind can't even begin to conceive the enormity of what's out there. And when people like him said to me, you can hardly even see 0.01% of the universe, like 99.999% of what is out there, you can't even see with your physical eyes.
No, exactly. So we're only seeing just a fraction.
We think we're... Sorry, I can't hear you.
I say we're only seeing just a fraction.
We're seeing a minuscule fraction. I mean, people, go on about mobile phones and TVs, and we're speaking now down phone lines. People can't see these frequencies, but we know that they're there. And so people tend to think of our bodies as being solid and our world as being solid, but we're basically 99.999% empty space. And what we think of as matter is organized energy. And what organizes that energy is mind and intention. So as Gary says in his books, we're one enormous mind.
Yeah,
but we just don't know it.
Yeah.
and that it, this is all a projection of our unconscious, because the unconscious
Absolutely. I mean, when I was in that very, very super heightened state, I started manifesting objects, because as I thought of something that I wanted, it appeared.
Yeah. No, no. Well, that's it. I mean, there's the avatars have done that, like Sai Baba, and people ridicule them. But no, it is. It's true. It's true that we haven't got enough. You know, we have not any idea of the power of this. But coming back, if I may, for a moment, Hazel, to what happened when you wrote the book.
Yeah.
I mean, it took tremendous courage, and I can remember reading that Diana kept encouraging you, didn't she? She said, this is going to take a lot of courage, you're going to take a lot of ridicule, but you have to do this, you know, to get the message out. And I think that's what happened. Would you like to share with our listeners a little bit about the downside, if you like, of writing that fabulous book? There was a big downside in your traditional career, wasn't there?
Well, I mean, it just it destroyed my career. The thing is, when you're in that super heightened state and you believe that you have access to all knowledge, you have to be really, really careful. For instance, there were times when I thought I knew the answer to the world food crisis, and so I thought, oh, I should ring the White House and have a word with Mr. Bush and that kind of thing. When you're in these super heightened states, you think that everybody is going to believe you. And so I wrote that book when I was in a fairly heightened state, and I got a few things muddled up. And so I was totally trusting that it was meant to be, because it was so real. The world over there is far more real than our world. And so when it appeared, my career was destroyed almost overnight, because all of our friends, the phone stopped ringing. I would go on television and they'd get the whole audience behind me that was totally skeptical, and they'd say, you've only done this for the money. Whereas, in fact, I'd already agreed with Diana that if the book made any money, then that would go to children's charities. But I lost my job, obviously, at the Sunday Times, because I couldn't even work at a computer. It nearly destroyed my marriage. My income just went to nil overnight. But then you see, I'd won the spiritual lottery. I'd had an experience that no amount of money can buy.
Absolutely.
And so I look back on it now and I think, my God, I really was able to do that, and I was able to change the way I appeared to people, and I was able to manifest objects. Now, the thing is, as Gary Schwartz said to me once I got to his lab in Arizona, he said, that's great, Hazel, you can claim to be Elizabeth I or Henry VIII. He said, can you do it in my lab now? And of course, this is 2 years later, of course I couldn't do it anymore. And so, as he says, if you're going to make these claims, you have to be able to prove them. And so we did some double-blind trials, and in both of those trials, Princess Diana came through. So he was so convinced of a connection that, in fact, he wrote the foreword to two of my books.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, I mean, that's tremendous validation and well-deserved, you know. But it's a tremendous, shock. And, you know, I think back, Hazel, to when I was a young man and I used to watch Uri Geller on TV.
All right, he's a neighbor of mine. I like Uri very much.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, again, I don't know what it is, but when the whole world was laughing at this guy and ridiculing him, and I wasn't even in this kind of stuff then. I was in the oil game and all the rest of it. But I remember watching him and watching and listening to what he said, and something said to me, this guy's genuine. This guy's genuine.
He's very genuine and very powerful, and not many people get to see what he's truly capable of. Same as not many people get to see what the Dalai Lama is truly capable of. But we're all capable of miracles. You just need to know it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, it's absolutely right. And, of course, he eventually was totally ridiculed. They smashed him down and all the rest of it. But it's, I think it's part of the journey, of learning, etc. And after you'd lost your job with the Sunday Times and with the stuff you were doing in nutrition, what virtue. Did you then go on a healing journey of yourself to heal all the parts? Because there are many different parts, you know, the emotional side, the physical side.
I think that time does that for you. And also, once I've met so many scientists who said, you know, things like, oh, sure, bar walking, that's really easy. Let's go outside, I'll show you. And levitating, wow, you know, my friend Fred can do that. You know, once they take the, if you like, the uniqueness out of it, I mean, it is unique. And don't get me wrong, miracles are special because miracles per se don't happen that often. But at that time, they were happening regularly to me. But the scientists were like trying to ground me. Do you know what I mean? Because my ego was getting out of control. And so eventually I switched the whole thing off. I went to see a scientist in Glastonbury, actually, in England, where I'm going to an orbs conference this weekend. And she looked into my eyes, and I told her I was becoming like a master, some kind of enlightened master. And she looked deep into my eyes, and she said, and very gently she said, I need you to say, I am only Hazel. And she kept repeating that, and then she said, I need you to say it. And so there I am, I'm looking into the eyes of a renowned scientist, and I start saying, I am only Hazel, I am only Hazel. And in the moment that I truly believed it 100% with my heart and my mind, this huge genie that had got outside the bottle went back inside me. Bang. Gone.
Wow. So that, I guess that was a bit of a double-edged sword, because there must have been part of this that was pretty cool as well, huh?
Well, to be honest, for months afterwards, I kind of hated Serena because she'd, like, switched me off. I could still hear Princess Diana a bit, and I was still pretty psychic, but all the really amazing stuff stopped. But in a sense, she saved my physical life because I was beginning to, like, I felt as though I was going to just disappear because I wanted to merge with the All That Is. So I was beginning to dematerialize and rematerialize. And I now think that I understand what spontaneous combustion is because I felt I was going to explode any second. And my ego was just ridiculously over the top. So I think that, in a sense, she switched me off. I think everything it happens in the moment that it's meant to happen. And so my job was just to come here, have this experience, share it with other people, and if it helps them, then that's absolutely magical. And it obviously resonated with you. And with other people, obviously, if it doesn't resonate with them, they just think I'm completely balmy, basically.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, it's a gradual thing, Hazel, you know. Even though I say that, you know, which is true, you know, when I read your book, it was like instant. I knew absolutely instantly this is authentic and all this bit, and the same when I saw Yuri Geller. But I can remember before I started my awakening process, which was a much slower thing, which started with me, you know, getting into giving up alcohol. You know, that's what it, I realize though now as well, because as my book's about, is that a lot of people that go down the route of alcohol addiction or drug addiction very often are people with very heightened sensitivity, and they find
Absolutely.
It difficult to, I mean, I just find it difficult to kind of handle the material of the third dimensional world, and then of course because they're quite a high level of vibration, and then the alcohol or the drugs lower that and enable them then to sort of function in some way, you know.
But that's the height of my experience when I rang a friend who's a naturopath and he's a homeopath, and he said, what you need to do, Hazel, he said, you need to go and eat sugar right now. And so the health writer in me said, sugar, you know, that's not kind of a healthy food. He said, but when your brain is cooking, it needs the right fuel to cook with, and of course your brain only uses glucose. So he was actually helping stop my brain from, like, almost exploding with all the information that was coming through it. So I've found that a lot of healers, for instance, smoke cigarettes. They're grounding themselves. A lot of alcoholics, as you say, sometimes are very super sensitive people, and they're grounding themselves, but there are also those people who might have had parents as alcoholics, and therefore there's this genetic predisposition to liking alcohol, or what is happening in their lives causes them to start drinking. So there's always more than one factor or cause, if you know what I mean.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, I quite agree with you. It's a fascinating journey to go into this stuff. And, you know, you mentioned the fire walking. That was another thing which I did.
How did you get on?
Fantastic. It was just amazing because, you know, how they spend the whole day raising your level of vibration, really. That's what they're doing. And conditioning the mind. And when I went into the auditorium, 10 o'clock in the morning, my ego was telling me, you know, this is crazy, you're going to burn your feet and you're not going to be able to get on that airplane on Monday morning. And then by the time the doors opened at, 8, 9, 10 at night or something, shoes and socks off, straight over the coals, and, you know, it was just an incredible experience to actually know that you'd done that without any physical pain whatsoever. And
you see, that's what Gary is saying in his book. Mind is everything.
Exactly.
I mean, I've injured my back really badly, and I've just spent nearly 15 months in an awful lot of pain. And last week I interviewed an enlightened His Holiness Swami Sri Shiv Kopananji, who comes from India. And I said to him, how am I going to beat this problem, this terrible pain in my back? And he said, Hazel, you need to remember the power of your mind. Because we all think that we're physical bodies and we're not. We're a mind with a seeming physical body. And what comes first before anything is mind. I mean, we said earlier that matter is nothing more than organized energy. And what organizes that energy is mind and intentions form patterns that form matter. So a mind has made us. And so if we change our minds and if we change our attitude to things, then we can change the outcome. And on that note, I'd love to say to anybody listening out there, you know how now we have this world credit crunch and this terrible credit crisis and banks collapsing and insurance companies collapsing? We are doing this. We have created this. And the media are packed with everything is bad news. And so what they're doing is they're feeding into our minds that there's a 1930s recession coming, that everything's going to be really terrible, and we are soaking this up like sponges. We have to create a different reality.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, it's absolutely right, and it's anything which is fear-based that's going to feed the ego. The ego loves all that stuff, you know. And as you say, people are listening, the thing is to let, you know, they don't have to read it, they don't have to believe it. You know, it's just about focusing on what they want, not what they don't want.
Well, I mean, Bill Tiller has shown through his experiments that a sustained, focused intention creates a physical outcome. What we have now is a global, sustained thought that the world is going into a major recession. So if we can change the way that we're all thinking, we can change the outcome.
Yeah.
And there will come a time, I firmly believe, when we will have nothing else to turn to but ourselves and our minds. It's got to get as bad as it can get before... You know how when you were drinking your alcohol, the only person that could stop you doing that was you. You had to reach some kind of pit or the end of the abyss before you thought, I have to stop this.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I had a lovely saying, which is that, you know, people only change when the pain of staying the same gets bigger than their fear of change, because people are terrified of change and terrified of even opening their mind to new ideas, you know?
But, I mean, somebody once said, I'm afraid, I don't know who it was, that the definition of madness is to keep on doing what you've always done and expect different results. That's basically what you just said, too. So what I'm saying is, if we keep going around in circles, and if we allow the media to keep telling us that everything is going to get worse and that life is not going to improve, it never will.
That's right, yeah. But, I'm totally in tune with that. And, you know, on that subject that you've touched on, one of the other things that I came across, I don't know if you've come across her as well, is the work of Jasmuheen. Have you heard?
Oh, yes, I met Jasmuheen. Yes, of course.
Yeah, I thought you probably would. And you know, when I've done my firewalk, Hazel, and then I was given a tape of Jasmine by somebody, a breathworker of mine, and I hadn't been talking about that. I'd never even heard of her work. It was totally foreign. But again, I got that at the right time because I knew instantly that that was true. I knew instantly that we did not have to eat. We have the potential, put it that way, of flourishing without any kind of physical nutrition whatsoever. Potential.
I know, but the thing is, it's really, really important, John, that we should say, with the codicil on that, that if you're going to try living on light, because God obviously provides everything that we need, all nutrition, everything can come from God. This is how these enlightened beings can be locked up in a monastery for 6 months and come out being really healthy. I mean, there's been plenty of tests done in India on yogis who are quite capable of doing this. We now know that this can happen. Tests at the University of Arizona ongoing on people who are living on light. We know it can happen, but if you have someone who's on a spiritual journey who says, oh yeah, I really fancy doing this, and there was this one girl who went and camped on a Welsh hillside here in England, and she just stopped eating and stopped drinking, and she starved to death. I mean, you have to be fairly advanced spiritually, and you need to have the right people and support around you if you're even going to attempt anything like that.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I was going to just bring that point out. It's not to say just go out and do that, but what I'm emphasizing is the potential.
I mean, yes, all I'm saying is I personally know that it is definitely possible. One of my very dearest friends here in London does this thing of living on light two or three times a year, and then she goes back to eating again. And she's had the experience of knowing it's real, but she's been on her spiritual journey for like 35 years. And so, as I said earlier, we're 99.999% empty space. We just think we're solid, but we're not. We're beings of light in a physical shell that's basically empty space. It's a holographic universe out there.
And what happened in the end, Hazel, after your book came out? I know you wrote a follow-up there, and you went down investigating with a lot of scientific people to validate the experiences and to get an explanation. What's happened? Have you finished now doing your nutritional writing, or are you coming back into that now?
Well, I wrote an encyclopedia of health about 2 years ago, and thank goodness that is a bestseller in England, so I'm thrilled about that. But really, the spirit, once you've had that kind of experience, as you know, it kind of becomes your life. And so I've also written quite a lot. Have you heard of the orbs phenomenon that's happening now?
The what phenomenon?
Orbs.
Oh, the orbs?
O-R-B-S, orbs.
Yeah, no, I mean, I know I've seen orbs, etc., on photographs, but I haven't heard of what's happening as a phenomenon. What's that?
Well, I mean, there's been two or three big conferences, and I've written a piece for the Sunday Times in London, which in itself is incredible, because for a magazine of their integrity to write about a NASA scientist who is categorically stating that we are now able to see intelligent beings from other dimensions is astonishing. And so this weekend in England there's a big orbs conference in Glastonbury where a lot of physicists are gathering to say, yes, there are other dimensions out there. There's a lot more out there than just us, and we can now see them thanks to digital photography.
Yeah. That's a curling photography?
No, it's a specialized digital photography in the sense that with digital photography, you can see more frequencies than you could with old cameras. So therefore, these orbs are starting to appear on digital images all over the world.
Wow.
And they're starting to research them.
Yeah. It's certainly an exciting time to be living. There's so much new information. Sometimes it's hard to keep up with it.
It is. And also, I would say there's an awful lot of junk out there on the net. I mean, as well as very good information, there is also some poor information, and there's some downright ridiculous information. So I think it's a question, like you say, of using your intuition and seeing what seems real to you. I think it's really important for everyone to find their own truth and not soak up the truth from somebody else, because otherwise that's how you get situations like Wacko and all these other cult leaders who say, I have the truth, and people soak it up like sponges, you know? So I always say to people, listen to your own inner voice and trust your own intuition.
Yeah, and I think, I totally agree with you, and I believe that we all get what we need when the time is right. And sometimes, you know, I can't say hand on heart now that I believe today the same things I believed, you know, 8 years ago or 5 years ago, because it's a continuous stage of learning. So I don't sort of get too much into knocking a lot of other stuff, because for me it was all a stage in my learning, you know.
But I think that's really important, that, you know, you have good days and bad days. And I mean, some days I interview people and I just think this is the biggest load of BS I've ever heard in my entire life. But that particular person might have thousands of followers. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So what resonates with me might not resonate with you or other people. So, I mean, also, a lot of people are very mentally unbalanced these days. Life tends to be lived in the fast lane, and there's an awful lot of stressed people out there and there are also a lot of people who are very gullible. So I think I think to have integrity in your spiritual teachings of others is really important right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the reasons that I'm so drawn to A Course in Miracles, because you know, when you hear the story of how it came about and when you actually read the material, there's no sort of normal human being could have written that stuff. So, you know, and it makes that simple sense. And it also comes down to the thing which is really teaching, is that it's about forgiveness. But this new kind of forgiveness, which Gary explains so very well, you know, that it's a forgiveness that none of it's ever really happened. It's all our own projection. So it's, again, taking self-responsibility, isn't it?
But I mean, as I said earlier, we are basically one huge mind that has splintered into 6 billion minds, if you like. It's like if you took a whole ocean and took out a teaspoon at a time, and all those teaspoons became individuals. And so we are from one huge mind. And when we're all totally forgiving, and when we become what scientists call totally coherent, total stillness, then we all return to that one mind.
Yeah.
So every time you forgive someone or yourself, you're helping to heal the whole mind, to bring it back to wholeness. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Isn't it exciting, because we keep saying it's so simple. It's not easy, but it's simple. Hazel, I can hardly believe that we're already almost up to time. I just wanted, before we close, for you to give our listeners your website, and if they can contact you, can they contact you by email if they've got any questions at all?
Sure. They can log on to my website, which is www.hazelcourtney.com, and the Courtney is, well, it's HazelCourtney, all one word, hazelcourtney.com, and they can contact me via my website.
That's fantastic. So I'll just repeat that for our listeners there. So it's www.hazelcourtney.com. Is that correct? Fantastic. Well, Hazel, thank you so much for giving up. I know it's late over there in good old England. And
Yes, 11 o'clock, I'm going to bed now.
Good for you. Well, you deserve it. And I look forward to reading your next book, and I look forward to seeing you on the circuit when I get back. So thank you so much for coming on the show, and I wish you every success in the future.
All right, God bless. Take care.
Take care. Thank you, Hazel. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
Bye.